Consider Michael Olson's irrefutable law of the food chain number two. The farther we get from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Now, we are all, or some say at least, an average of 1,200 miles from the source of our food. And so today we pause to ask, who is in charge of food safety?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 569th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Carol Stafford.
Hello.
Parmley Taff.
Hello.
And you. Folks, a while back, Kyle Bauer, who is from KFRM, our food chain affiliate in the great state of Kansas, asked who is responsible for inspecting the food that comes into the United States. Good question. Turns out so little food imported into the United States is inspected that no organization should claim that responsibility, which leads us to the irrefutable law of the food chain number two. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. And we are, on average, a long way from the source of our food. Even those who grow our food for a living are a long way from the source of our food. And so today we ask, who should be in charge of our food safety? Should we rely on manufacturers to guarantee the safety of their food? How about government agencies, maybe the United Nations? Here to help us explore this question, we have Carolyn Smith-DeWall, Center for the Science and the Public Interest. Welcome to the Food Chain, Caroline.
Hi, Michael.
Good to have you aboard.
Well, thank you.
Center for Science in the Public Interest.
Yes.
What is it?
CSPI has been around for about 35 years. And when we started, things like yogurt weren't traditionally found in grocery stores. And our food chain has really changed tremendously during time that CSPI has been around.
So are you saying you were responsible for bringing yogurt?
Well, I think actually Mike Jacobson, our founder, was probably one of the early embracers of foods like yogurt and some foods that weren't really traditional to American palates at that point, but now they really are. So we've seen a lot of changes, but we've also seen changes in the way food is brought to us. Right now, food is centralized in different regions of the country and even in the world, and it travels a long distance often to our local supermarket.
Well, you're the director of food safety at the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Does that mean that we should look to you for our food safety? Are you responsible?
No, I can't claim credit at all, or credit or blame. We are a watchdog group, which means that our 900,000 members around the country and in other countries as well, we have a lot of members in Canada, help support our advocacy. So we watchdog the federal agencies and Congress when it comes to issues of food safety. So, you know, in a way, I do feel guilty every time there's an outbreak because I feel like maybe we weren't working hard enough at watchdogging the agency.
Well, we always ask who pays the way. So who pays the way at CSPI?
We have 900,000 subscribers to Nutrition
Action. Wow, 900,000?
Yeah, we have a magazine called Nutrition Action Health Letter, and we have 900,000 subscribers, and they pay the bulk of the way. And then we get maybe, it's less than 10% of our funding from foundations. Well, but most of it is really, it's very grassroots.
Right. So we should also mention today, folks, that not with us today are some representatives of the Food and Drug Administration. We worked with them for a couple weeks negotiating some time, but they're just too busy to talk with us, so there you go. Let's talk about that distance you brought up earlier. There was a time not too long ago that we were truly an agrarian society. And gosh, as young as I am, or I think I am, I can remember those days because I was raised on my grandparents' farm up in Belfry, Montana, and most of the food that we ate came from the earth. And it wasn't clean in the sense that today's foods are clean. I mean, goodness, everything, there was, you know, animals everywhere, and we mixed freely, I guess. But nobody ever got sick. And today it's a lot different. Even farmers who are responsible and who earn their living growing our food get food from thousands of miles away. So distance has really become a part of our food chain, correct?
Yes, that's right. In fact, some of the foods that we purchase, things like tomatoes, have been bred specifically to ensure that they have a long shelf life and can withstand the trauma, really, of transportation. So tomatoes that we get today are not, I often think, they're nowhere near as flavorful as what I grow in my garden, but it's because they've been bred for certain characteristics that have nothing to do with taste.
And there you go. So distance and shelf life and all of those things. But also, let's talk a little bit about the impact on food safety. Back on the grandparents' farm, we were all responsible for food safety, I guess, but it's not that way anymore.
Well, a lot has changed since that time on the farm. My history didn't start on the farm, but I do remember the local butcher shops and how you had to go to a variety of stores to actually buy your food. And interestingly, in Europe today, that's still very much the practice. So you have specialized butchers and specialized cheese shops.
So even city people who don't live on a farm were still very close to their food source of their food, correct?
Right, and they had people, experts, really, that they could ask questions. Also, it's from people I know who did grow up on farms, there was a really big difference that everything was cooked. And frequently, they overcooked it. I mean, the green beans were wilting. At least that's what I've heard from some of my friends who had a similar experience. Whereas now, consumers really value fresh food.
Al dente.
Yes. Undercooked, lightly cooked, or often not cooked at all. And when it comes to fruits and vegetables, that means that whatever gets on them, whether it's from the farm level, in the retail store, or in our kitchens, can actually affect us. And if it's a serious pathogen like E. coli on the spinach 15 months ago, it can cause very serious illnesses and even death.
Right. Am I right in thinking that the farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food?
Well, I think you're partially right and partially wrong. And
give me the wrong part first.
Okay. Well, what the food industry tells us is that in the big manufacturing plants, they can exercise a lot more control. So they bring the products in, but they can demand certain quality standards are met, and they can demand certain safety practices are followed from the source of the food in the processing plant and all the way to us.
Uh-huh.
So what the industry claims is that in some of these larger operations, you actually have economies of scale and economies of safety, that they can actually do much higher levels of control than if we have a lot of small plants.
Right.
Now, the problem, and we've seen it a lot over the last 15 years, is that when a problem originates in one of these big processing plants, it spreads far and wide. A lot of food is contaminated. We can have really large outbreaks and really massive recalls, millions of pounds of meat. So the safety is offset somewhat by the fact that when a problem does occur, it's a big problem.
Well, I see what your point with respect to safety, but what I'm talking about right now is control.
Uh-huh.
What I'm trying to say is that it seems like the farther away we go from the source of our food, the less control we have. Whereas at a farmer's market or a baker or something, you look right in the person's eye and you can kind of see what's in the food. But when the food comes from thousands and thousands of miles away, even from a very, very safe facility, you have no control, do you?
Well, you certainly can't ask questions. You know, when I go to a farmer's market, what I like is to actually ask them, how is it grown? Did you use
sure.
this or that? Did you use fertilizers? Did you use, what were your inputs? They'll tell me, I mean, you launch into a conversation, they tell you all about the farm, all about their theories.
So they can tell you. I'm going to have to take a quick break,
uh-huh.
folks. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about food safety with Caroline Smith-DeWall, who is the director of at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Pick up your phone and join us, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, I have a question for all you folks out there today. Who do you think we should put in control of our food safety? Do you think that we should put the farmers and the food processors and packagers in total control? Do you think we should rely on government agencies? Or what about the United Nations? Who do you think we should put in control of our food safety? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is Michael Olson, and we are on the Food Chain today with Caroline Smith-DeWall, who is the Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. On the East Coast, right?
Yes, we're in Washington, D.C.
Well, we were talking before the break about, I guess, you know, that we can look with some assurance and see the growth of this incredible new industry of farmers markets and whatnot. But it seems like back around the end of World War II, we really saw a big sea change in the way that we fed ourselves. You know, we essentially went from, after the war, we went from being an agrarian nation to being a city-oriented nation. And with that, we, you know, moved into town. And with that, we increased the distance from our food, and then we had to, of course, start looking for some way of protecting ourselves. Can you give us a little history of those early efforts to watch over the safety of our food, Caroline?
Certainly. Well, actually, the first safety legislation for food was passed in 1906. And there's a wonderful story, because Upton Sinclair wrote a novel called The Jungle, really trying to highlight the working conditions in Chicago slaughter plants around the turn of the century. And he always said, well, I aimed for their heart, but I hit the American public's stomach. Because right after this novel was published, Congress passed the first Meat Inspection Act in 1906. And at the same time, they passed legislation also to regulate other foods.
Mm-hmm.
So meat inspection started around 1906, and today we have almost the same model in place. There were some modernizations. Chicken was added in the 1950s. And then following Jack in the Box, the outbreak that infected hundreds and hundreds of people and killed about 3 children in the Pacific Northwest, mostly in Washington State. Following that, they added some bells and whistles, a HACCP system, and put more responsibility on the industry, but also required the industry to do a lot more testing. So meat inspection is based on a very old model, but with some modern aspects. Most of the rest of the food, though, you know, all the seafood we eat, dairy products, and all the produce, as well as most processed foods, is regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Mm-hmm. And they do it on a shoestring budget. They are visiting processing plants on average about once every 10 years.
Oh, good. And that'll allow them to keep track, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they can only check 1% of food products coming in from foreign countries. We essentially have this system where we take food from any country that wants to send it, any manufacturer, and we check 1 out of 100 shipments, which is not nearly enough to actually monitor and control the food. So when you think of who's in control of 80% of the food supply regulated by FDA, the answer is, well, if it's not the industry, it's nobody.
Right. Okay. And with respect, let's go back to the agencies themselves. We have the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and we have the USDA, Department of Agriculture. And so they kind of share responsibilities, right?
Yes.
For example, if it's peanut butter we're talking about, it's the Food and Drug Administration.
That's right.
If it's chicken pot pies, it's the United States Department of Agriculture.
That's correct.
If it's frozen cheese pizza, it's the Food and Drug Administration, unless it has pepperoni on it.
Right.
And then it's USDA.
Yep, the lines can be right next to each other, and if they're slicing up pepperoni and adding it to the cheese pizza, it's regulated once a day. They have to visit that plant every day under USDA's system, but the next line is visited once every 10 years by the FDA. Same plant, essentially the same line, and almost the same product, but two different regulatory systems.
So when we look in some of the situations that have occurred recently, for example, the melamine contamination of the pet food from China, nobody was really looking for melamine, right?
That's right.
I mean, nobody, even if they had inspected it, they probably would not have known what they were looking for.
No, and that's an example of an emerging hazard. But, Michael, what was really troubling about that to me is that following 9/11, there was a great deal of concern expressed about the food supply as being a target for some kind of biochemical attack or, you know, if someone contaminated a large volume of food. And unfortunately, the melamine showed us that while Congress passed a few provisions to address that back in around 2002, the provisions they passed really weren't effective in controlling a contaminant which was intentionally added to that flour before it was shipped to the U.S.
So when the government goes to make rules and decide how to do things, how do they make those rules and decide how to do things?
Well, the rules originate with the statutes. And as I said, the underlying laws are really based on laws passed around 1906, mm-hmm. a few of which have been updated a little bit here and there, but mostly it's marginal changes. At the FDA, they regulate food largely after it's already making people sick or causing a problem. They're basing their legal structure on an adulteration standard. So if food is adulterated, then FDA can regulate it. But other than that, it's rarely checked. Whereas USDA has a legal responsibility right in the law to inspect every piece of chicken, every piece of beef that we eat.
But do they?
Yeah, they do. They have an inspector.
So there's inspectors on every line then?
They do. For slaughter plants, they're there all the time. I mean, no animal, unless it's done under state inspection, no animal in the U.S. is slaughtered or moved forward into food production unless a USDA government inspector is there. In fact, we have more inspectors at USDA than we have meat plants because of this system. But then the processing plants, the places that they cut the meat, they maybe grind the meat, they cut the pepperoni, those plants also have to be visited every day. So USDA's system is very intensive. And when it comes to imports, USDA also approves the country that wants to ship meat to us. They check around 15% of the products coming across the border, and even a high number of those are checked in a laboratory. So they have an intensive inspection program both for domestic food and for imported food.
But wait a minute. I think I heard you right. You say that every animal that is butchered, processed, is checked by the USDA.
Yes.
But only 15% of the imported animals.
The reason that it's only 15% is because they have ensured that the government, maybe it's Canada, Australia, mm-hmm. New Zealand, has their government inspectors looking at every animal at slaughter and while it's being processed. So USDA requires that foreign countries have the same system in their plants that export meat to us that we have here. So USDA inspectors aren't doing it, but inspectors in those countries are.
Okay, good. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking food safety, and we're talking with Caroline Smith-DeWall, who is the Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science and the Public Interest, and of course we're talking with you. The question we're asking today is, who do you think we should put in control of our food safety? Who do you feel safe with watching over your food? Should it be the farmers and the processors and the packagers and the manufacturers that should be responsible? What about government agencies? Do they make you feel safe? Or how about the United Nations? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, here's an irrefutable fact of the universe when it comes to food at any rate. The farther we get from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. And we are all now, some say at least, an average of 1,200 miles from the source of our food. So we pause to ask, who should be in charge of managing the safety of our food? What do you think out there? Should it be the growers who actually grow the food, the processors who put it in packages? Should it be government agencies like the Food and Drug Administration or the USDA? How about the United Nations, after all? We're getting a lot of our food now from overseas. Who should be in charge? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. We're talking with Caroline Smith-DeWall, who is the Director for Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. And you folks have been working on food safety issues for a long time, haven't you?
Yes. We worked actually in the 80s on organic,
mm-hmm.
and actually helped pass legislation to get the USDA organic label.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 10 years from passage for them to get a regulation out. And, you know, it's really, the growth in organic has been amazing. We also were responsible for the nutrition label in mm-hmm. On packaged food products that tell you what's in the food and what the nutrition is. I started at CSPI back in 1994, and I've been working in food safety for a while anyway. So we have people who really become experts on the topics.
Well, speaking of experts, let's go back to the difference between USDA, which is the Department of Agriculture, and the Food and Drug Administration, and talk a little bit about the leafy green episodes that we've gone through in the last couple of years here. So that would not be USDA unless there's cows in the pasture, right?
If the spinach that caused, it was, I think, over 200 illnesses in numerous states, the spinach was widely distributed, and it had been contaminated. It originated on a single farm, a single field, and then it moved into a processing plant. And of course there, the spinach was mixed with other spinach from other farms, and it was packaged, and then it was trucked or shipped all over the U.S. And it was a very large outbreak, very severe, at least, I think official government the official government estimate is that three people died, but there are probably two other people who aren't counted among that number who also died really proximately resulting from this eating this contaminated spinach. So FDA regulates that, Michael. FDA regulates, but again, they often don't regulate until there's a problem. FDA isn't visiting farms today,
right,
and they have no requirements that farmers do anything. Farmers don't have any safety obligations that originate from the federal government today.
Isn't that, though, a situation that's bound to change because of the spinach incident? I know that, you know, the FDA is putting a lot of heat on grower organizations to come up with some safety protocols, and they indeed did come up with what they call the leafy green protocols. And these protocols are going to really put some severe restrictions on what farmers can or cannot do. In many respects, it's almost like they intend to sterilize the growing regions and remove any outside life at all, you know, deer and wild pigs, and get rid of everything.
Mm-hmm. The what we learned from the spinach outbreak is that you really need to look at the whole environment, which, frankly, I think farmers do every day. I think farmers do look at the environments. They know their farm better than anybody else. But you need to look with an eye for the fact that you haven't had a problem yet,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean that the problem may not happen. And you need to look in a way that's preventive.
Right.
So what we're encouraging farmers to do is to have a plan to explain in words how you are keeping the food supply safe from things like E. coli and Salmonella. Now, we've had outbreaks from Salmonella, for example, on cantaloupe. And it's impacted the citizens of California several times. The cantaloupe originated from Mexico. But as we look at Salmonella, that usually originates in poultry. So, and cantaloupe grows on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're fertilizing the land with chicken manure, you may be adding Salmonella to the environment that then can show up on the food. That was an imported product, and basically FDA, after three or four outbreaks, stopped the importation of cantaloupes from that region because they weren't controlling the problem. But we want farmers to look around and say, well, E. coli 015787, where does it come from?
Cattle.
It originates in the cow. So you have to look at the land not only for how productive it is or how much nutrition the soil has, but also for where the hazards may come in. And, you know, I agree. I mean, building fences around every farm isn't going to be anyone's ideal. But we need to look with an eye to where the hazards might be entering. Are there manure piles? Is there a creek running through both the cattle grazing area and the spinach farm that could be bringing mm-hmm. pathogens in? And, of course, the wild pigs. I heard from a researcher at CDC who had been to the farm that the trail that the pigs had made was like a little pig highway through the spinach field.
And that's really what they think is the responsible agent for carrying the E. coli from the cow pasture to the spinach fields.
Right. It could have been manure improperly applied. It could have been the creek water somehow being used or spread widely across mm-hmm. the field. Or it could have been the pigs running through the field. Any of those three could have done it. But what the farmer needs to see, and again, it's easy to say this sitting in Washington, but I believe that farmers do this anyway. They have to look at the land and say, where could the hazards be entering, and make sure that they've got a plan and that they've written it down, that while cattle may be nearby, we've controlled this, or we're testing the water, or we're stopping the pigs from running through because they may carry it.
And we got right down to it, though. It really wasn't the farmers who caused the mass contamination anyway, wasn't it?
Spinach was unsafe to eat. The mm-hmm. spinach from that field was not safe for human consumption unless it was cooked. But the farmer who sold it maybe didn't know that, or maybe right. wasn't looking. Again, it originated in one field, but the processing plant is where it spread, it grew, it was allowed to get into a lot of packing.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Mike Wilson. We're talking food safety with Caroline Smith-DeWall and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. We want to know who you think should be responsible for the safety of our food.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
This is Charles Osgood. Bose Quiet Comfort Acoustic Noise Canceling Headphones fade background distractions so you can hear your music more clearly. So comfortable you may forget you're wearing them. Call 800-611-1468 to try them for 30 days risk-free. Purchase QC headphones by January 31st and receive $50 towards select Bose products purchased at the same time. Conditions and limitations apply. Choose QC3 headphones for an on-ear fit or QC2 headphones for an around-ear fit. Call for details. They make a great gift. Call 1-800-611-1468.
Well, who do you think should be responsible for the safety of our food? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain. We're talking food safety with Caroline Smith-DeWall, who is the Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science and the Public Interest. You know, Caroline, when we're talking about the spinach situation, it seems like the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which ostensibly regulates leafy greens, is not responsible until something goes wrong. So, therefore, we must rely on a farmer, right?
We rely on the farmer, the processor, and even the retailer, who has recently started putting in some pretty tough requirements for growers who are shipping to a whole group of retailers.
So we have to have somebody to get our hands on, right, if something goes wrong?
You know what? What I think happens is that in the absence of effective government control. So in other words, if we wanted the same standards applied to growers in California and in Mexico that wanted to ship food to the U.S., we would need a government standard. There's no state program that's going to do that. And the retailers' programs apply only to the small group of growers that ship to that particular retailer. Mm-hmm. So if we want more uniformity and more standardization in how the safety, to make sure the same safety standards are applied for both domestic and foreign-grown food, we would have to have a government program. But because we don't have one today, the state of California stepped in with a marketing order program. A number of retailers have stepped in with their own programs. So people other than the government are really stepping into a void that they see because of the spinach outbreak and the tomato outbreaks and lettuce outbreaks that have happened over the last few years.
So we've seen a lot of U.S. farmers, domestic growers, give up and head south of the border.
Yeah.
Now, or someplace in another country, do they have the same guidelines for growing, for food safety that we do here?
No. The The some farms that are in foreign countries are very well run and have very they have water treatment facilities that ensure the water they're applying is good, but in many, many places, the standards are different. The application of pesticide, the regulation of pesticides is entirely different. The water quality is different. And this means that food grown in foreign countries sometimes presents a risk. And in at times, we've seen major outbreaks from hazards that are tougher or hardier or pose more of a risk to U.S. consumers. Guatemalan raspberries,
yep,
resulted in a major outbreak from Cyclospora, which was a parasite that doctors didn't even recognize because it was so associated with traveler's diarrhea. It wasn't thought of as something that large numbers of people who weren't traveling at all would come down with. So it took doctors a long time to recognize that. But we've also had examples of hepatitis A strains that cause more severe illness and even death, where hepatitis A normally is it's a tough illness and not something anyone wants to get, but it isn't usually linked to death or lots of hospitalizations. So what we do see is some of the pathogens, the germs coming in from other countries pose a greater threat to the public. But the bottom line is we're seeing outbreaks from both domestically grown and imported produce. So if we're going to make an improvement, it should apply to both.
So if you're selling to this country, you should comply with the same standards that we have here.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Who, again, we're going back to inspections. The question Kyle Bauer from KFRM in Kansas asked, who inspects food that comes in from other countries?
The Food and Drug Administration is supposed to check non-meat items coming
right.
in from other countries. So USDA is inspecting meat.
And they inspect about 15% of the meat.
They do, and it's already, but they've already approved the country
right.
and companies that are shipping.
Mm-hmm.
So they have controls originating in the country of origin and all the way through the border checkpoints. FDA doesn't have any in-country controls and relies really on this last-minute border inspection, trucks rolling across the border, and the inspectors might go in, I mean, they check paperwork sometimes. They might go in the truck and actually look at the product. But really about 0.2% is ever looked at in a laboratory. FDA really relies on problems that after they present themselves, then they put alerts, border alerts, and they might stop product after a particular grower or company has already had a problem. Then they'll put out an import alert, and at that point they might do more intensive inspection. But they're just catching a very small amount of anything coming into the country, and they're really using the U.S. consumers as
sure.
as the canaries in the coal mine for where there are problems. Once they find a problem, then they act. And we would like to see FDA have the power to really have a program much more like USDA's in terms of having...
And that's what we'll pick up when we come back from the break. Folks,
great.
This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, we're talking food safety. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what we should be doing with Carolyn Smith-DeWall. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, folks, the farther we get from the source of our food, the less control we have over that food. And many say we now are 1,200 miles from the source of our food, which means that we have very little control over what's in that food. So who should we look to protect us, to make certain that our food is safe? Should it be growers? Should it be processors? Should it be government agencies? Should it be the United Nations? It seems as though everybody's in charge and nobody's in charge. Is that a fair description, Carolyn Smith-DeWall?
Yeah, that's a great description. Too many chefs in the kitchen, perhaps. You know, I want to I want to leave your listeners with a couple of thoughts. I mean, first of all, it's critically important that the people who grow the food, who process the food, understand that they're really at the center of food safety. It is the steps they take that will make it safe or unsafe. So really, control for food safety originates with the farmers, the processors.
What if we don't know where the farmer is? What if the farmer's on the other side of the world and doesn't particularly care one way or another about us?
Well, we are relying on those people today to grow a huge amount of our food. I mean, I think the estimates are up to, 30 to 60% of our produce, for example, is now grown in other countries, depending on what kind of produce it is. Over 80% of our seafood is coming in from foreign countries. So we are already relying on those people. The critical thing is to make sure that they play by the rules. They play by the same rules that our people play by, that the people growing for us. And if they can't, then they really shouldn't be selling to us. So it's really about creating a level playing field, but putting the control and the power where it belongs, which is with the people who have chosen for their life to be growing and processing food.
Okay, Carl has an answer as well. Carl, welcome to the Food Chain. What's your answer?
We need each other. We need third-party watch groups. We need the media. We need the government. We need the farmers. But ultimately, it's the consumer involved and concerned that will not buy something if it's like apple juice from China that you can't depend on compared to apple juice in America you can. So that's the deal. The consumer ultimately informed.
And that does take a good press, a good media, looking into things, wondering about things. It does include advocacy groups like the Center for Science in the Public Interest, and it does include the government as well, right?
That's right.
Everybody has to be responsible.
Yeah. We need to be involved.
And consumers, I agree with your caller that consumers play a vital role. I mean, we also have to educate ourselves about safe handling of the product, but there is a huge power in our pocketbooks.
There you go. Vote
with
the pocketbooks.
Our ability to choose.
Well, Karen Smith-DeWall, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great time having you aboard. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't. And see you next week for more What's Eating What Radio on the Food Chain.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.